From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin. In a few minutes, a look inside small Texas-Mexico border communities known as colonias. First, survey teams with the National Weather Service spent the day checking storm damage in six counties south of Dallas-Fort Worth. 14 tornadoes were reported, some well after sundown. The Weather Service has confirmed four of them so far. Three were in Rio Vista and Johnson County, and a fourth near Glen Rose. Severe storms popped up Sunday afternoon, dropping hail as big as softballs and so much rain it caused flash flooding in some areas. Anita Foster with the Red Cross said she was afraid she would find major damage.
We could see the debris on the radar. We could hear the storm spotters. And knowing that there was a tornado on the ground in multiple locations, and we come out today and it's not great news, but it's not terrible news that most people are going to be okay.
Foster says the tornado touchdowns happened in primarily rural areas. She says barns, outbuildings, and trees bore the brunt of the storm. She says her crews found a few homes in the Rio Vista area that are so damaged families cannot live in them. Despite all the storms, no injuries have been reported. The Weather Service says there is a chance for thunderstorms across North Texas through the evening. A few could include hail and lightning. Farther south, severe storms will be possible on a line from Waxahachie to Corsicana to Palestine. About 500,000 Texans live in what's known as colonias. These communities pop up near the Texas-Mexico border and usually lack the basics like paved roads, utilities, and secure housing. The Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas just released a study that looks at life in colonial communities. As Courtney Collins reports, as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative, residents there are compassionate and innovative. But there are still many problems to be solved.
It was 1996 when the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas first released a report about living conditions in Texas colonias. A few years ago, researchers decided it was past time for an update. Jordana Barton is with the San Antonio branch of the Dallas Fed.
It's almost 20 years later, and actually our report was still being cited, so we knew it was time to revisit the colonias and understand all the work that has been done and discover where we are now.
This study focused on the six Texas border counties with the highest concentration of colonias: El Paso, Maverick, Webb, Starr, Hidalgo, and Cameron counties. There are currently close to 2,300 colonias in Texas. Just 10 years ago, 450 of them had zero infrastructure. No waste disposal, no drinking water, nothing. This new report shows an additional 286 colonias have all forms of infrastructure, from utilities to plumbing. 160 more at least have waste disposal and water to drink. That's progress, but some colonias still go without.
For example, in Webb County, more than half of the colonias, there's about 65 colonias, more than half of them, 35, are without access to drinkable water.
Another problem is what researchers call the new colonias. These neighborhoods have platted lots and utilities, but quite a bit of substandard housing. For example, a mobile home with a cinder block addition to accommodate a relative. These unconventional hybrid homes might help family members, but they come with a cost.
Maybe their house is not up to code, so they can't hook up to the utilities. They can't qualify. They end up paying fines, and you create there a scarcity trap where people end up paying fines rather than putting money into their housing.
Despite the poverty that runs through colonias, Jordana Barton says one social issue residents don't have to worry about is homelessness.
It's because of the values of the culture to not let any family member be left out. They'll live two or three families in one home, or family members will build on the same lot. In other words, colonia residents are innovative. They're solving a potential homelessness problem.
A reminder that the resilience of residents is reason for optimism, too. Courtney Collins, KERA News.
You'll find the complete Colonias report from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas on our website, keranews.org. Three trustees from the Dallas Independent School District are suing one of their own, the board president. Elizabeth Jones, Joyce Foreman, and Bernadette Nuttall filed suit against board president Miguel Solis today. They say he violated district rules by not scheduling a meeting to discuss Superintendent Mike Miles' performance within a 60-day period. The suit says the deadline to hold that meeting was April 21st. Solis, a Miles supporter, has scheduled a meeting on Miles May 14th after the upcoming school board election. In the lawsuit, the trustees say they want the superintendent assessment to be held Friday. A court hearing is set for tomorrow morning. Solis says he hopes the issue is resolved quickly to bring the focus back on the students DISD serves. Senator Ted Cruz is positioning himself as the anti-establishment candidate in a crowded field of Republican presidential hopefuls. Today on Think, which airs this week from NPR headquarters in Washington, Chris Boyd talked to Todd Gilman of the Dallas Morning News and Abby Livingston of the Texas Tribune about Cruz's attempt to represent a party with whom he frequently clashes.
Senator Cruz certainly has burned some bridges within the establishment, but the way I look at it is there are just so many candidates running this time that this pie just gets sliced up in so many different ways. And Cruz is probably going to do fairly well with his small portion of the pie with anti-establishment conservatives. The danger for him is if there are too many anti-establishment conservatives running as well.
That's right. And so, you know, there are trade-offs to be had in all of these things. So Jeb Bush is the establishment choice, and that comes with a certain amount of money. And that's good for him, but the trade-off for him is he loses Tea Party support every time somebody says he is an establishment choice. The converse is true for Ted Cruz. Every time his people that he is really trying to appeal to hear that McConnell hates him and that there's friction and he voted differently from John Cornyn, the number two Republican, and that people won't sit near him at the weekly policy lunches at the Senate, whatever it is that is supposedly the kind of thing that you would think someone would go to the Senate to want to do, to build relationships, to build coalitions, to get legislation through. Everything that is the normal path for a senator, Cruz takes the opposite path.
Think airs all this week from NPR headquarters in Washington. Today's episode re-airs tonight at 10 or listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. Finally tonight, any true Texan knows the bluebonnet is the state flower of Texas. They're out in full force right now, blanketing North Texas roadsides. But did you know back in the early 1900s, there was a fight over what to name the state flower? Historian Patrick Cox talked with Texas Standard, the statewide radio magazine, about the battle over the bluebonnet.
We all know the bluebonnet is the state flower of Texas, right? Texas historian Jack Russell McGuire once explained the bluebonnet this way. It's not only the state flower, but also a kind of floral trademark, almost as well known to outsiders as cowboy boots and the Stetson hat. So making the bluebonnet the official state flower in 1901 should have been an easy decision for state lawmakers, or at least one would think. But in reality, the debate got hotter than a Laredo parking lot. Enter John Nance Garner, a young state rep from Uvalde. He was having none of this. Being from the Southwest, Garner argued the state flower should be none other than the prickly pear cactus. He thought the plant's durability, combined with its beautiful orchid-like bloom, made it the perfect representation of Texas. Another hot contender was cotton, at the time the biggest crop in Texas. But none of them won the day. Instead, it was a woman's club that put the bluebonnet over the top. The Texas chapter of the National Society of the Colonial Dames of America, to be specific. The dames brought in a painting of a bluebonnet, delivered it to the House floor, and virtually dared lawmakers not to select the blue carpet of the Texas prairie as the official state flower. Garner lost the vote that day, but his passionate plea for the prickly alternative earned him his nickname, Cactus Jack.
Historian Patrick Cox says Cactus Jack, John Nance Garner, would go on to become an influential member of Congress and a powerful vice president serving under Franklin D. Roosevelt. Chance of thunderstorms tonight across north central Texas. Right now, thunderstorm reported at DFW, where it's 63 degrees. From the KERA newsroom, I'm BJ Austin.